Nell, a young girl with alabaster skin, wears a dark hooded cloak. She turns a corner and walks cautiously through a damp cobblestone alleyway, dimly lit by gas street lamps. She clutches a basket and makes her way towards several brawling men. The men in top hats shove one another as the girl ducks into another alleyway. A silhouette of a man appears in the dark haze. A boy wearing a cap bounds down some steps and follows her into the next alleyway. Derek Jacobi, Toby Jones, The Old Curiosity Shop, from the novel by Charles Dickens. Nell glances over her shoulder, then rounds the corner of a damp brick building. She walks along a dockside, several feet above steps leading down into the darkness. Small torches burn alongside the building, lighting her way. In a dimly lit room, Nell watches a man count coins into a small pouch. There's 12. The man, in his 50s, with straggly hair, takes his pen to write in the ledger, then turns to Nell.
Take it.
Nell cautiously steps towards the pouch sitting by the candle on his desk. The man watches her lift the pouch.
He'll be very grateful to you.
So he should. Tell him I expect to see a return on my investments very soon.
Good night.
Oh. Here. Let me walk you home.
I can find my own way.
Nell rushes out. Turning back to his ledger, the man smiles to himself.
Very well.
Clutching her basket, Nell walks quickly along the dockside. Storm lanterns light her way. Gina McKee, Adam Godley, Martin Freeman. She slows cautiously as she rounds a corner. Anna Madeley, Steve Pemberton, Brian Dick. Adrian Rollins, Bradley Walsh, Josie Lawrence, Jeff Breton, with Sophie Vavasseur and Zoe Wanamaker. She enters a dark alleyway and glances over her shoulder fearfully. The orangey glow from the storm lantern's flames reflects off the puddles in her path. The girl passes a man coming in the opposite direction. The boy in the flat cap follows her at a discreet distance. She stops and turns to him.
Kit, is that you?
Yes, miss.
Thank goodness.
Come with me. I'll see you on.
She follows Kit, and they walk down the center of a cobblestone street.
Walking with you, Kit. Glad to hear it, miss.
The lantern's flames dance in the darkness.
My grandfather. He shouldn't have sent you anywhere at this time of night. He said it was urgent. He'll always be here for you, miss.
I know you are, kid.
Kit and Nell approach the old curiosity shop. Its brass lettering is across a wooden arch at the entrance. Nell knocks on the door.
I thought I might have lost you forever, Nell.
Don't worry. I'd always find my way home.
You should take more care, sir. It's dangerous to send.
Nell shoots Kit a look, silencing him.
Thank you, my boy. I'm very grateful to you.
Are you staying for supper, Kit?
No, not tonight.
But there's enough...
Not tonight, I said. We'll see you in the morning, boy.
Very well. Good night, miss.
Like it.
And make it an early start. Tomorrow we've got work to do.
Yes, sir.
Wish your journey is successful. Yes, Homie.
Ornate candelabras with lit candles light the room. Nell hands him the pouch.
Now, where's my coat?
You're not going out tonight, Grandfather?
Yes. I'm afraid I must.
She watches as her white-haired grandfather leaves the shop. Wearing his top hat, he walks down the street. A shadowy figure, also in a top hat, waits in the mist around a corner. The figure sets off after Nell's grandfather. Under the glow of the oil lamps, his face is revealed. It's the man who gave Nell money, Daniel Quilp. Behind a fence, Kid emerges from the darkness, observing the men. From a discreet distance, Quilp follows Nell's grandfather. He peers in through a window and watches Nell's grandfather sit at a table playing cards. Quilp turns away from the window, looking concerned, and then he smiles to himself. Mrs. George, Mrs. Ginniwin, and Betsy Quilp sit eating dinner at a table, wearing white bonnets.
I can never stand in awe of a man as your daughter does, Mrs. Ginniwin.
Are you listening to this advice, Betsy?
Yes, Mama.
Well, good.
I'd kill myself first, then write a letter saying how he did it.
Oh, well, I'll drink to that, Mrs. George.
Mrs. Ginniwin sets down her glass, then grabs a chicken leg.
Quilp. He is the greatest monster that ever lived. He's a tyrant. And my daughter is such a passive soul. She hasn't the spirit to stand up to such a hideous, vindictive, ugly little man.
Good evening, Ma. Ladies.
Oh, Mr. Quilp. Didn't you come in?
Evidently. Go on, Ma'am, you were saying. Oh, Mrs. Quilp. How delightful. You've invited a neighbour to supper and sent out for something light and palatable.
I didn't invite anybody to supper, Daniel. It was my
child.
Good night, Mum.
What? You're not going, Mrs., surely?
Thank you for your hospitality.
So soon? Well, stop for breakfast.
Mrs. George leaves.
Get a supper, Mr. Quilp. My daughter has the right to do as she pleases.
You'd like to think so, Mum. You look ill, Mrs. Ginniwin. You've been overexciting yourself. It's a weakness in old women. Get to bed.
I shall go to bed when I please, Quilp, and not before.
Please to go now, Mrs. Ginniwin.
No.
Upstairs, I say!
Mrs. Ginniwin scurries out of the room. Betsy sits at the table, looking as though she might cry.
I feel in a smoking humour, Mrs. Quilp. And we'll probably blaze away all night. I'd like you to sit with me and move not an inch in case I want you.
Yes, of course, Daniel.
Oh, word of advice, my dear. Should you ever listen to those harpies again, do you know what I'll do to you?
No, Daniel. What will you do to me?
I'll bite you.
Betsy looks away from her husband, her pale face frightened. With the aid of a walking stick, Nell's grandfather makes his way down a narrow stone pathway towards home. He bolts the door behind him as Nell rushes down the staircase in her long white nightgown, a shawl draped over her shoulders.
I'm going to need your help again, Nell.
Must I?
Yes, I'm afraid you must. Our future depends upon it. Another errand tomorrow morning.
Nell's grandfather sits by the fire. Nell goes back upstairs. At the Quilps, Quilp sits smoking while Betsy sits next to him, her head slumped to one side.
I'm sorry, Daniel. Please forgive me.
I should hope so.
The next day...
What are you doing sat there?
Betsy slumped in an armchair.
Oh, what a vision of loveliness. Breakfast.
Quilp sits in an armchair opposite.
Now!
Quilp wanders along the dockside. Wearing a rumpled top hat, he passes a man carrying a large canvas sack over his shoulder. He stops when he sees Nell waiting at the corner of the stone building.
No, sir.
He rounds the corner past her and she turns to follow him. Ropes and boxes line the path. In his office, Quilp grabs his ledger.
What has the old man done with it?
I do not know, sir.
You lied to me, Nell.
No, sir.
I believe it. Who wouldn't? Such a sweet and honest face. You're looking pretty today, Nell. Charmingly pretty.
Nell sits amongst the sacks and boxes that clutter his office, avoiding his gaze.
Wife.
You already have a wife, sir. Mrs. Quilp.
She's a clapped out creature. You'll be just the proper age for me in a couple of years. What do you say?
I have nothing to say, sir.
Well, think about it. Be a good girl now. Very good girl. See if you don't come to be Mrs. Quilp II of Tower Hill.
Quilp smiles, baring his rotten teeth. Nell stares at the ground, her auburn hair hanging in bunches. Nell eyes him as he gets up, his back to her.
He's an astute man of business, isn't he?
I suppose so.
All this money I'm investing by way of these loans. They will make my fortune, won't they?
Might I guess, sir. Grandfather told me to return directly. I had an answer.
But you haven't one now. You can't have one till I'm ready to give it. You'll come with me. Come on.
A man in rags sits behind bars.
We're going to see my grandfather, sir.
Have patience, Nell. Have patience. I have a little business to attend to.
What kind of place is this?
It's a debtor's prison. A place of people who borrowed money and never paid it back. Excuse me.
Quilp walks down the corridor as prisoners reach out for him. Nell glances over her shoulder, then follows Quilp down the corridor. Dozens of hands reach through the bars towards her. She glances at the various prisoners as she slowly makes her way down the dim corridor.
Hello. We don't want to keep your grandfather waiting, do we?
I tell you again, Grandfather, I wish to see my sister. The one you keep cooped up in there, poisoning her mind against me.
You were given every chance in life. I brought you and your sister up alone to be decent and honest. And how did you repay me? By your scandalous misconduct about town.
Frederick, the handsome young man, pushes his grandfather aside with his walking stick and goes in. Quilp leads Nell down the street.
No one likes some money, Linda, Nell. Especially when it's time to pay him back.
Nell's grandfather shoves Frederick's feet off his table.
You've squandered everything I gave you.
Listen to him, Swiveller. He's a bitter old man and a liar, too.
It is a devil of a thing, gentlemen, when relations fall out and disagree. Why not shake hands? Forget about the past.
Hold your tongue.
So don't interrupt the chair. I say it with the utmost respect.
What do you say, Grandfather? You're saving up a pile of money here for my sister. Why not hand over a reasonable amount to me and make everything once again friendly between us?
Oh, my God! Why do you hunt and persecute me?
Freddy!
Quilp, thank God! This boy would murder me given half a chance!
What have you been saying, Fred?
Nothing. Well, Nell, how are you? I suppose the old man teaches you to hate me.
Grandfather never speaks to me about you, Fred.
Yes, I can believe you there. Lend us a shilling. Come, Swiveller, our visit's ended here. For the time being.
But I thought you wanted to see your sister.
I've seen her, haven't I?
He grabs Swiveller.
So much for family relations. Thank God I acknowledge none.
I knew I could depend on you, Quilp.
A moment, please. Nell, would you excuse us?
Nell's grandfather signals for Nell to leave the room. She does.
Sign.
So, what is it?
Oh, read.
It's a bill of sale.
Well, correct. This is the last money I will give you, and I make this loan on the understanding that you will pay me back everything with my numerous investments doubled or even trebled. Should you fail to do so, I will have the authority to call into being certain legal powers which you cannot presume to question.
Everything I own becomes yours to do with as you see fit.
Stock and property.
The old curiosity shop. Why do you ask me to sign such a document now? Haven't I always paid you back?
Your debts are mounting, sir, and I need some kind of surety.
No, I will not do it, Quilp. Everything I own is for Nell's future.
Very well, there's nothing more to say.
Quilp grabs his hat and stick and goes to the door. A knight's armor is on display next to it. He turns back and sees Nell's grandfather lean his head on the wall in despair.
Wait! I must have some ready cash to bridge my investments.
The document.
Is there no other way? Me no option.
I will not ask in what good investments all my supplies are sunk. You are a deep man, sir. Keep your secrets close.
Yes, you're right there. I keep my secrets close. Very close.
Nell's grandfather holds out his hand and Quilp places a pouch into it. Nell's grandfather curls his fingers in a fist around it. He looks upstairs sadly. Swiveller and Freddy.
Well, dinner last night closes Longacre to us.
Beg pardon?
I enter in this little book the names of the streets we can't walk down while the shops are open.
Due to our strained credit.
Correct.
Damned nuisance, sir.
Ah, but I've a plan to make our fortune with very little trouble, Swiveller.
You've showed me too many already, Freddy. And what have I got to show for it? Nothing.
Ah, but this plan is different. Now, do you think my sister has a pretty face?
Yes. She has a pretty face. Very pretty face. Fine girl for her age.
Exactly. She's still only 14.
Oh.
And that's all the better. Now, if I take Nell in hand and bend her to my will, what's, with a little coaxing, to prevent your marrying her?
She's 14, Freddy.
I don't mean now.
No.
Say in 2 years' time. Marry my sister and you will be the sole inheritor of my grandfather's will.
How very inviting. I suppose there's no doubt of his being rich.
None. What do you say, Dick?
Well. Give it a whirl, I suppose. No harm in a bit of wooing, is there? Now, I'm a damned handsome fella.
Quite. I'm afraid I have to dash, Swiveller. I might be gone some time. Possibly a very long time, if you understand my meaning.
He walks away from the pregnant woman approaching. Quilp peers into the old curiosity shop, where Kit and Nell watch a bird in a cage.
Oh, what a touching little scene. Where is he?
OSHA.
Your grandfather, Nell, and the old wastrel.
He's upstairs, sir. But he's sleeping, sir.
Well, this document will wake him.
Can't go up there, sir. It's private.
Mr. Quilp does what he likes in his own shop.
But this isn't his shop.
Oh, yes, no. It is. Or will be. Might I introduce my lawyer, Mr. Brass?
Brass sneers.
There must be something hidden in this junk to pay back your debts.
I've gambled away everything of worth, of fortune.
And you and the child are truly lost.
Where will we go, Coop?
That is no concern of mine. Unless...
Yes? Well, tell me. Look, I'm at your mercy. Anything you want, just ask and I'll agree to it.
I'll need a serving maid, a young girl, to do for me.
What are you suggesting? A mere child? Nell is not for sale.
Might I ask what you're searching for, Mr. Quilp?
For anything of value. No, I've no intention of leaving the old man until I find it.
Quilp looks up from the desk he's searching. Nell enters.
My duck of diamonds.
Such a treasure, Mr. Quilp.
I'll ask you for your opinion, Mr. Brass. Keep quiet.
Of course, sir. How presumptuous of me.
I need to give Grandfather his supper, sir.
Oh. May I?
Quilp lifts the doily covering the supper plate. He grabs an oyster, opens it, and sucks out its contents greedily.
What a remarkably pleasant way he has with children. It's most affecting. It's quite a treat to watch him.
Thank you.
Good night.
Nell leaves. Brass stares vaguely off into space. Stunned, he sips from his wine glass.
Let us leave here tonight.
But where will we go, Nell?
The countryside, Grandfather. Let us run away. I love the shop as much as you do. But we can make a home anywhere if we need to.
Like beggars?
Yes, like beggars. It is possible, Grandfather. If we want it badly enough. Let us be free of Quilp tonight.
Nell and her grandfather tiptoe downstairs. Brass is asleep. They freeze, then continue on, past Quilp sleeping on a bed. Carefully, Nell grabs one of the rumpled blankets covering him. She eyes Quilp, who remains motionless, asleep on his left side. Her grandfather pulls back a rug on the floor. He jumps and looks over at Brass, who lolls his head. Satisfied he's still asleep, Nell's grandfather lifts up a floorboard as Nell slips her hand into Quilp's pocket. Nell's grandfather puts some aged documents into the hole in the floorboards. He takes out a small decorative box and opens its lid, lifting a necklace from it. Nell lifts a key from Quilp's pocket, then silently walks by Brass, keeping an eye on him. She picks up her basket and hands the key to her grandfather. She goes to a side table to pick up the birdcage. They leave. The two men are sleeping in the cluttered, dimly lit shop. They walk down the stone pavement side by side away from the shop. Nighttime darkness surrounds them as they make their escape. In the early morning light, Kit carries a laundry basket to a line. He sets down the basket, and putting on his cap, he sees the birdcage. He unfolds an attached note that reads, "My dearest Kit, I'm writing this to make you aware that myself and grandfather can bear it no longer. Grandfather can no longer pay the debts that he owes to Mr. Quilp."
Chanel and her grandfather ran away.
Quilp descends the staircase in the shop. Bras is asleep.
Little Nell! Oh, where are they? Bras! Wake up, you drunken fool! You seen them?
Seen who, Mr. Quilp?
Quilp sees Swiveller approaching the shop, bearing flowers in a white box wrapped with ribbon. He peers in the window and is about to rap on the door when Quilp opens it abruptly.
Good morning, sir. Is the little lady of the house at home?
She's flown.
Flown?
Gone. Both of them. Vanished in the night.
But where have they gone, sir?
You tell me, sir. Where's that brother of hers?
Freddy? Ah, now there's the problem. I'm afraid he's done very much the same. Ran off to France, got himself into a spot of bother with a girl dancing on the halls. Not dancing anymore, I'm afraid. Far from it. Little Nelly won't be wanting these, then. Perhaps the sly old fox has made his fortune and gone off to live in a tranquil spot, with a distant view of the changing sea.
Careful! You nincompoop!
What's this here, sir? Looks like a secret hiding place. Worthless papers, sir. Nothing but outstanding debts and bills.
A jewellery box. Give that here. Empty. You might have known. Everything of value gambled away. Well, I won't be made a fool of by a young girl and a thief. If the old swindler gets away with this, others will do the same. I must have justice.
Quilp's jowly face is angry. Nell and her grandfather walk along a grassy path next to a stone wall.
Nice, you look tired.
I'll never feel tired again. Now we're rid of Mr. Quilp.
Yeah.
He hands her a pouch.
That's the last of our money. A few gold coins. Ah. Should I ask, or even beg, for their return, you must refuse me. Do you promise me?
I promise.
They stroll beneath the thick tree boughs. They sit, and Nell tucks the gold coins into a pocket in the hem of her dress. Her grandfather watches her do it up.
I want to give you.
He takes a necklace from his pocket and opens the locket.
Yes. She always meant you to have it when you became of an age. For the sake of her love.
He places it around her neck.
It'll remind you of home. And of everything that is good in the world.
He lifts his lined face upwards. Greenery surrounds them.
Is it very much further, Mr. Quilp? The air is exceedingly dry and I suddenly feel in need of a light refreshment.
Oh, well, we are very near, Mr. Swiveller. It's a moment's walk away.
Pity. I hope this work you're offering me won't be too taxing. I'm not usually an early riser. Oh. I had the sun. Very strong in my eyes last night.
Think of the rewards our joint venture will bring, sir. You keep an eye on my business dealings with Mr. Brass, and I promise to find Miss Nellie Trent and bring her back here for you, sir. We'll be married when the girl becomes of age. I promise.
What's the worst of it, Mr. Quilp? Miss Trent's fortune in perspective looks such a long way off, and I have no immediate readies.
Glancing around, Quilp takes a coin from his pocket. Swiveller bites the coin and pockets it.
But might I ask,
Why do you think Mr. Brass cannot be trusted?
Please, sir.
Any man who chooses to be my legal representative, sir. Need I say more?
Quite, Mr. Quilp.
Quilp nods and extends his arm, signalling Swiveller to walk on. Brass sees them on the move and gathers his books and documents from the bench he's been sitting at. He sets off after them clumsily. A dark-haired woman, with a monobrow, files documents in an office crowded with documents. She bends over, just as Quilp enters and leers at her bottom.
There she is. The strong arm of the law. Miss Sally Brass. The only woman in the world with all the charm of her sex and none of their weakness.
Hold your nonsense, Mr. Quilp. I wonder you're not ashamed of yourself talking before a strange young man.
Oh, this strange young man is himself too susceptible to your feminine charms not to agree with me, Sally.
Oh, is he indeed?
I am.
You are.
Oh, yes, I am. Good afternoon, sweet lady.
Pray, might we not be introduced properly, Mr. Quill?
Brass sets down his books.
Mr. Dick Swiveller, sister. A gentleman of good family who is content, for a while, to fill the humble situation as our new solicitor's clerk.
By whose authority?
Mine. If you want my continued business.
And we are very happy. Very, very happy indeed.
Well, I propose Mr. Swiveller enters upon his duties at once.
And where will he sit, Mr. Quilp?
On your chair, ma'am. Until you can buy another.
Mine?
Of course. How charitable of Mr. Quilp to suggest such a thing. Sally's chair fairly vibrates with the power of the law. It'll be your guide, your companion, and your friend.
Oh, will it?
Yes, ma'am. It will.
She lowers her head, a faint moustache on her upper lip. She picks up her straight-backed chair, roughly.
Mr. Swiveller.
Quilp rolls his eyes at Brass, who grovels after him. A maid ducks behind the staircase railings as they leave. Quilp steps out onto the street. Brass follows him and stands in the archway.
Mr. Swiveller, sir. As a friend of the brother, I want him to lead us to the child.
Of course, Mr. Quilp.
Quilp goes. Brass stares after him, pressing his index finger to his lips in a shush signal. The maid peers through a keyhole at Swiveller.
Good Lord.
Who are you?
I'm from below stairs, sir.
Really?
There's a gentleman come about the advertisement. Will you show him the lodgings?
I haven't got anything to do with the lodgings, girl. Show him yourself.
Miss Sally said I wasn't to. Should she be out?
Why not?
Because people wouldn't believe the maid service was any good if they saw how small I was. They think they've been shortchanged.
Very well.
It's 18 shillings a week, and fires in winter is 8 pence a day.
Swiveller leads a man into a dingy room with a fireplace table and chairs.
£1 per week, and the fires in the wintertime are 10 pence per day.
I'll take them.
You will.
Without facing Swiveller, the man holds out coins. The long-haired Swiveller accepts the money smilingly.
In case of letters or parcels.
My correspondence is taken care of. Good day, sir.
The maid scurries away from the doorway where she's been eavesdropping. The lodger in his 40s, with his hair tied back in a ponytail, stares out the window with his lips pressed tightly together. In the bright daylight, Nell and her grandfather enter the gates to a walled market town. Triangular colored flags hang from the stone buildings. Nell's grandfather smiles at her as they stroll through the bustling crowd. A man hammers the wooden hat of a punch puppet.
That's the way to do it!
No, Mr. Punch, where's the baby?
What are you doing?
What does it look like we're doing?
We're mending our dolls.
Nell's grandfather wanders on from the puppeteers and spots men standing around a barrel gambling with cards. He turns to Nell.
Great show at the country fair, miss.
And you wouldn't do to let them see the present company undergoing their repairs, now would it?
Suppose not.
No, of course not.
Spoil the illusion.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
The puppeteers exchange a look and spring into action.
Mr. Short!
Partners!
In the punch!
Mr. Baby!
And Judy!
Come on, Rich.
Mr. Short waves Judy's arm at Nell.
Yes, I've had a long way.
May we ask where?
You're travelling from, sir.
London.
Ooh! The city of dreams, eh, Mr. Short?
And nightmares, Mr. Codlin.
For some.
Roman travellers, are you?
Yes, you might call us that.
Well, take a seat and share a pinch of snuff.
No, thank you.
You must be tired, sir.
After walking so far.
Why not stay a while? For the child's sake.
And see our marvellous...
puppet show!
Oh, can we, Grandfather, please?
No, I think not. Remember why we are leaving London. Goodbye, gentlemen.
They walk on. They turn back to them.
You're in need of any?
Nell's grandfather glances over at the men playing cards next to him.
The girl could help us sew some of our dolls.
Could we stay? Please?
Very well, gentlemen. Anything if it makes my granddaughter happy.
That's the spirit! Come this way, sir. Come this way.
The puppeteers walk behind them. Short unfolds a piece of paper that reads, Reward, Wanted Old Man and Girl. Codlin snatches it from his hands. Bross's lodger strolls up to the grey street towards the shop where Quilp hammers up a for sale sign. The man puts away his notebook. He steps towards the dour-faced Quilp.
Previous owners of this shop, an old man and his granddaughter. I'm told you know them.
What's it to you?
It's my business, I will not say.
Oi! Oi! Kid Labels! I want a word with you!
Kit runs away.
I'm afraid, sir, that's my business. I will not say.
A man blows fire. Nell mends dolls.
Your wages?
Some bright new pennies.
Thank you, sir.
You can't think what an interest we have in you, my dear.
Have you, Mr. Goodland?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, why don't you tell us a little bit of your history?
And if we can help you in any way.
Rest assured, Mr. Codlin.
And Mr. Short.
Well.
Help me, sir.
Oh, yes, my dear, you and your grandfather.
Why is he running away?
He isn't.
Ah, fibs, Nelly, fibs.
An innocent creature cannot tell a lie.
What's your secret?
If you excuse me, sir, I must go to him.
No, stay.
Let go.
Of course, Nelly.
We'll talk later.
When you've more time.
Nell rushes away from them. At Kit's, the birdcage hangs in the window. Quilp is holding a baby.
Please. Where are they?
I haven't seen.
What about the bird?
What's going on? Who are you?
Where's the old man and the girl?
Kit's mother glances towards the note that sits on a shelf. Clutching the baby, Quilp reads the note.
Here. I don't eat babies. I don't like them. It'd be as well to stop this young screamer, though, in case I should be tempted to do him a mischief. Thank you.
He's a good boy.
He grabs a hold of Kit. Kit stares at Quilp wide-eyed as he holds him down. Quilp lets him go and storms out of their modest dwelling. Children watch the Punch and Judy show.
Symphonies. Ew, it's very
very important. You two be quick on the doorpost.
They suspect us. It's no longer safe here.
Come, my child, we must leave.
He rushes Nell away. Punch smacks Judy in the face. The puppeteers take their bow.
So please give generously.
Thank you.
You're so kind.
Where did it go?
There!
Short spots Nell and her grandfather making their getaway.
Get out of the way!
Still wearing their puppets on their hands, they push through the bustling crowd.
We've lost them, you clod! You were meant to be looking after them!
Don't you shut me!
Go watch the face!
Don't!
Nell and her grandfather sit on a horse-drawn cart piled high with straw. Their legs dangle over the side. Nell takes the reward notice from her basket on her lap and shows it to her grandfather. They share a look as the cart trundles along a rough track through a green field beneath a storm-brewing sky. Homely Sally Brass stands on the landing outside her lodger's room. She crouches down to peer through the keyhole. Thin, gawky Brass comes up the stairs.
Baby.
On our lodger?
Of course. We don't know who he is. I don't trust him.
It'd be an extremely unpleasant circumstance if he were to bounce out suddenly, my dear. Swiveller, fetch a bedpan.
Bedpan?
And stand against that wall, in case of violence.
Oh.
Yes, sir. Of course, I'd be more than a match for him, but I'm the master of the house, and the laws of hospitality must be respected. Might I possibly...
What is your business here?
A man arrives. The man wears a red jacket and has a bird perched on his shoulder. He enters the lodger's room.
Stand aside. Let a woman's fortitude prevail.
Sally peers through the keyhole as Brass signals Swiveller away. Sally and her grandfather stroll into another market town as dusk settles around them.
Rest here tonight, eh, Nell? Make a fresh start in the morning.
They enter the stone building. Quilp sits in the darkness of a carriage as it speeds down a bumpy road. Nell and her grandfather eat their dinner in a pub. At a nearby table, shady characters play cards. Her grandfather stares longingly at their game as a barmaid passes their table.
What's the matter?
If only I'd gone on for a little bit longer, my luck would have turned, I know it.
Nell glances towards the gamblers, then looks back at her grandfather.
Win tomorrow. How much money have we got left?
If we spend the money we made at the fair, enough to eat and sleep well tonight.
What about the money I gave you for safekeeping?
Nell stares at her grandfather, who stares at the gamblers as if possessed.
Good.
Nell's grandfather pushes open the wooden door to her room. Quietly, he sneaks past her bed, where she lies beneath blankets. He walks around the foot of the bed to her clothes on a chair on the far side. A candle in the fire glow softly, lighting his way. Nell lifts her head ever so slightly and turns to his direction. He tears at her dress and the gold coins fall into his palm. He clutches them and he leaves the room.
Ah.
make us gamble. For everything.
Opening the door a crack, Nell spies on the gamblers. Dawn, four horses pull a coach with men piled on its roof up to the fugitives' lodgings.
Lend a hand here.
Nell throws off her covers and runs to the window in her nightgown. Seeing Quilp toss luggage from the coach, she grabs her robe. The hunched innkeeper carries Quilp's luggage and leads him to the stone entranceway. Quilp marches through, with the innkeeper lolloping behind him. They ascend a stone staircase, and the innkeeper runs ahead of Quilp, who checks over his shoulder. They enter the building, as Nell flies down a set of stairs with her belongings. She peers over the railing to Quilp below.
I hope you've had a very pleasant journey, sir. I wish you a very pleasant stay. This way, sir.
Quilp glances around the entrance hallway, then follows the innkeeper to the foot of a wooden staircase. Nell and her grandfather make their escape below. Quilp turns abruptly, but the pair have disappeared from his line of vision from the mezzanine. He ascends the stairs with the innkeeper in tow. Nell and her grandfather step outside and rush past Quilp's coach. They step through a rounded wooden doorway, and Nell's grandfather shuts the door behind them. Sunlight shimmers off of the green leaves of the woodland that Nell and her grandfather trudge through. By a lake, a woman pours liquor from a bottle into a china teapot that's laid out on the table in front of her. She replaces the cork and sets the bottle down. A black kettle hangs above a burning fire in front of her. The colorfully dressed, dark-haired woman sips her tea.
Nectar.
Nell and her grandfather approach. She waves to them.
I'm being friendly. Who won the helter-skelter horse race?
They look confused.
Yes, child. The helter-skelter horse race at the fair.
We don't know, Mum.
Don't know? But you were there. I saw you with my own eyes yesterday. You were in the company of a Mr. Punch, a very low and vulgar wretch.
I think you may have been mistaken, Mum.
I mistake nothing, child. You were working with two showmen.
Do you know the two gentlemen, Mum?
No. Do I look like I'd mingle with the likes of the puppetry trade?
We beg your pardon, Mum.
Granted, granted. Still, I can understand you being ashamed of working with such vagabonds.
Nell and her grandfather traipse on. The woman stands.
Come, come. Close, I say.
They approach her little camp that is set up next to a small caravan with an awning. The woman shakes her head.
Have some breakfast. You both look like you're in need of it.
In the pub, Quilp faces the innkeeper. He picks up an egg. Quilp eats the egg, shell and all.
I'm left without pain.
Disgusting. Salt.
The innkeeper passes him a salt shaker, which Quilp shakes directly into his egg-stuffed mouth.
What direction did I go then on?
I've no idea, sir. More's a pity, just up and left.
Quilp abruptly gets up. He faces the innkeeper and picks his teeth.
Bad manners.
He chews, then turns, grabbing his case and hat. He steps out of the pub into the sunshine. The dark-haired innkeeper sits stunned in the dark pub.
Quiet.
Eat and drink as much as you like. Don't spare anything. For it's a lovely knuckle of ham. How do you find it, Grandfather?
Very tasty, Martin.
What kind of business are you in, Mum?
Read that, child.
She hands Nell a colourful flyer from her pouch.
Hey, that is me. I am the world-famous Mrs. Jarley. Jarley's is the delight of the nobility and of the royal family. Oh, yes. They've all patronised me.
Do you know, I've never seen a waxworks, Mum. Is it funnier than Punch and Judy?
Funnier, sir? How dare you? My collection, sir, is not funny.
Oh, please forgive me.
No jokings and squawkings like your rickety boot players, no. Jarley's hysterical and famous waxworks is exhibiting at the Royal Assembly Room.
I dare say we'd like to visit, Mum. But I'm not certain.
No, we are poor people, Mum, and we have no work as yet. I only wish we had.
You amaze me more and more. Now, what line are you in? Now, what do you call yourselves?
Beggars.
Nell.
Beggars? Pass me the teapot. Do my eyes, nose and ears deceive me?
Nell and her grandfather watch in astonishment as Mrs. Jarley fills the teapot with liquor. She takes a long swig.
But you can read, eh? Well, that's a mercy. And write too, I shouldn't wonder.
Of course.
You'll journey with me today, I hope, Grandfather. Now, that's marvellous, marvellous. And in the meanwhile, we'll talk about finding you some respectable employment.
Codlin and Short sit at the lodger's table. Codlin hides the reward notice that Short has laid out on the table.
Pretty nigh all over the West Country, sir.
I've talked to travellers and fairground folk from most parts of England, but none from the West Country. I pray you can help me with the information I'm seeking.
We'll do our best, sir.
You can depend upon us, sir. Especially...
if you make it worth our while.
Sir.
The maid sits hunched over, peeling potatoes by candlelight. She stands as Sally enters.
Do you see this? Right. Don't say you never get any meat here.
Swiveller spies.
Don't answer back.
Swiveller tiptoes up the stairs as the maid hangs her head.
Tell me where.
Codlin shrugs. Codlin shrugs again, and Short sits unmoved, his hands folded on the table. The lodger rummages in his pocket.
Sovereign apiece.
Codlin stares at the money, then cocks his head, raises his eyebrows, and smiles at the lodger, who digs into his pocket once more. Short smiles, signaling the lodger to dig deeper. Short looks at Codlin, who stares at the lodger.
Where are they?
The last time we saw them, the old man and the girl.
They were travelling in that direction.
There.
They point to a map on the table.
I think I do, ma'am. And it's my hope to travel to the old gentleman and child today. But first I need to ask, will you let your son come with me?
Me, sir?
I'm not sure the old gentleman will want to see me. Your presence, Kit, would assure Nell of my friendly intentions.
Why shouldn't he want to see you, sir?
There was a disagreement between us a long time ago which has banished us from meeting for many years.
You've been away, sir?
Yes, ma'am. I made my fortune living abroad.
But we still don't know who you are, sir. Why should we trust you if you won't say?
I cannot say.
Then my son cannot help you, sir.
Kit and his mother fold a sheet. He nods and turns to go as Kit and his mother continue folding the laundry in a basket on the table. He turns back to them.
I have a word to tell you my full history. Perhaps then you might help me.
Kit turns to his mother. She nods. She holds out a chair. At Mrs. Jarley's waxworks.
Ladies and gentlemen. Mary Cook.
Queen of Scotland, you have been found guilty of high treason. You must take your punishment before the great British public.
Nell pulls a cord and a guillotine slices off a waxwork's head. Mrs. Jarley smiles at her and steps out into the entranceway.
Yours and the child's wages.
Nell's grandfather stares at the money. From a doorway, Nell watches her grandfather accept the money. Nell's sad gaze drifts downward as she steps away from the doorway. Her grandfather glances over at a man sitting next to him. Later at a card game, the same man clears coins off the table.
You've taken all the money I have.
You are your own master, I hope.
Yeah, now, don't jest with me, sir.
Could always borrow some, I suppose.
Borrow?
And when you're able, pay it back again.
And who do you propose that I should borrow from?
Well,
the man licks his lips.
The lady who keeps the waxworks has money and keeps it, I believe, in a tin box under her bed, but does not lock her door for fear of fire.
You mean rob, Mrs. Jarley, sir?
Well, borrow, sir. Borrow. Where's the harm in that?
Nell eavesdrops. The man deals another hand.
Bright, shiny, golden coins clinking into your pocket.
He smiles. In the mock deal, he lays down a fourth ace in front of Nell's grandfather.
Sir. Game of cards, sir.
Nell turns away. Later, Nell sits outside on a bench in the damp morning. Her long hair cascades over her black cloak. He steps over to her.
Is there something wrong?
Nell hangs her head, staring mutely at the ground. Her grandfather takes off his top hat and sits down next to her on the bench.
Gentlemen who spend their time playing cards, our honest men.
Why do you ask? Why shouldn't they be honest men?
I lost some money while staying at the inn. Unless it was taken by somebody only in jest.
Who would take money in jest? Those who take it to keep.
Sadness crosses Nell's pale face that she keeps turned away from him.
Wasn't it?
She looks at him.
Tell nobody about it, and perhaps we'll find it again. All the losses that were ever made are not worth any tears. Why should they be? When I can win them back again.
I had a dreadful dream. A dream of an old man in a darkened room, robbing sleepers of their gold.
No, child. No.
Yes.
Nell's grandfather hangs his head in shame.
Too real. I must leave here. Before the dream comes true again.
No. No.
Yes.
No, I...
We must.
Mrs. Jarley chats to the lodger and Kit.
Nell and her grandfather seem to have vanished like winter smoke up an old maid's chimney.
But why should they do that, ma'am? By your own accounts, they were happy and contented here.
Well, I'd like to think so, but you can never tell with travellers. They have restless souls.
Have you any idea where they might have gone?
I'm afraid not. Oh, that poor girl. What will become of her? I did have my suspicions about the old gentleman's state of mind. He seemed, well, rather agitated at times.
A caring man for the child, no doubt, sir. But not altogether happy when in himself he was
a liar and a thief.
Good heavens! What are you doing hiding behind Mrs. Fanny Firkins? Do you want to cause us all a fright? My heart is thumping, sir, thumping.
Good day, sir.
we meet again.
What is your business here, Quilp?
Well, same as yours. I'm looking for the old man and his granddaughter.
I hope you're satisfied, sir. Your behaviour's reduced the old man and child to beggars, driven them from house and home.
Why should that concern you? Oh, the old miser owes you money too, I bet.
Your talk is offensive, sir.
He's a thief, and the girl's no better.
If you show any more impudence, Mr. Quilp, you will oblige me to beat you, you little monkey.
What'd you say?
In the name of common sense, have you any idea of the old man's whereabouts?
What do you take me for, sir? A gypsy conjurer?
Then we have nothing more to say to each other. Good day.
Is that so?
Yes. Pray, leave us. I won't have my waxworks contaminated with interference. Oh, dear, no.
Get out of here.
Oh, I go willing, sir, but remember this. Wherever that old man and child have gone, they cannot hide forever. I'll make it my chief duty to find them, and when I do, may God help them both.
Kit stares after Quilp. Nell and her grandfather wander through the rainy streets.
Oh, I can't walk any further, Joe.
With her hood up, Nell holds her grandfather's arm.
You have to rest.
But where are we to go? We don't know anybody here.
No mistake, Kat. The kindness of strangers, Nell.
Boxes and planks of wood are stacked against a stone wall. Nell's grandfather sits.
You must beg, child.
Nell stands in the street, looking down at her grandfather seated in the small alcove.
Yes, child, at once.
Nell stands in the darkness, her face hidden by her rain-soaked hood. Slowly, she places her basket on the ground. She turns to the street, where people run past, shielding themselves from the rain. Her grandfather stares down at the downpour, his face tired and haggard. His brow is furrowed, and a sigh escapes from his mouth. Mrs. Jinniwin examines the top hat in her hand.
Gentleman's hat. Found floating in the river, sir, by his counting house.
It looks very much like my husband's hat, but we cannot be certain.
How long has Mr. Quilp been missing, Mrs. Jinniwin?
Oh, disappeared without a word 4 days ago, ma'am. Nobody has seen him, including those who owe him money. If he turns up anywhere, he'll float ashore somewhere in Deptford tomorrow morning, just in time for the flea market.
Oh. Poor Daniel.
Now, to the descriptive announcement of his death in the newspapers.
Isn't that a little presumptuous, Mr. Brass?
Not if you want his life insurance, ma'am. We must not allow grief to freeze our faculties.
Well, I would describe Mr. Quilp as, legs crooked, short body,
nose pinched,
flat.
Aquiline, you old hag! Do you call this flat? Do you? Hey?
Risen from a watery grave!
Nell's on the street.
No.
Please.
Nell's hair is soaked by the rain. People push past her as she begs. Mr. Quilp is lounging before a blazing fire.
I have some urgent business for you both.
Certainly, sir.
private business. Put away your book, Mr. Brass. I don't want anything in writing.
Oh, nothing in writing.
We understand you, Mr. Quill.
It concerns that boy's newfound friendship with your lodger.
Christopher Nubble's an extremely pleasant child.
I don't like him.
Nor I.
The boy thwarts me, and I owe him a grudge. And this new friendship with your lodger makes him a greater threat to our finding the old man and child.
How eloquent is Mr. Quilp. Remarkable man of language.
Yes, brother. Come to the point, sir.
The boy insults my importance.
He's a menace.
Precisely. Devise your own means of keeping him away from the lodger, then I will pay you handsomely for your pains.
Anything for you, Mr. Quilp.
Of course, Mr. Quilp.
Brass nods obsequiously and starts to get up. Quilp shoots him a look and he sits back down. They both get up when Quilp turns back to the fire. Quilp gazes into the fire. Nell trudges on through the pouring rain. She struggles to breathe. Weakly, she collapses into the rain-soaked road, her hands sinking into the mud. She crouches on the ground for a moment, hanging her head in despair. Rising slowly to her feet, she traipses past a storm's lantern and through the brown puddles towards the alcove where her grandfather rests. She picks up her basket and kneels before him.
Nobody cares, Grandfather.
Beg to their mercy, Nell. We must eat tonight.
I can't, Grandfather.
If you love me, Nellie, you'd find us money.
Please don't make
me. I need money to exist, to rest.
No.
Just do it! No. Can't you see I'm desperate?
He pushes Nell into the street. A look of torment crosses his face and he brings his hand to his eyes. Kneeling on the muddy ground, Nell turns to look at her grandfather. Weakly, she pushes herself up onto her feet, and with her head hanging, she steps out into the street once more. She holds out her hands to a passing woman who wears a white bonnet. Her grandfather watches her. She approaches a passing man who continues walking. She turns pathetically to passing pedestrians, who all ignore her and continue down the street. Sitting against the wall, her grandfather strains to see her, looking concerned. Nell doubles over. People continue past her when suddenly Nell falls to the ground.
Down! Oh my God!
Her grandfather rushes to her still body. Leaning on his walking stick, he crouches over her. A handsome cab approaches. A reverend climbs out of the cab into the rain. He helps Nell to her feet. The Brasses conspire. Brass stops Kit at the top of the stairs.
Come in, come in. A word, if I may.
He leads him into his office where Swiveller sits.
Matter? No. Why should anything be the matter?
You look like you're in pain, sir.
Oh, poo-poo. I never felt better. Mere fancy. Now, I've been thinking. Your mother's a widow, is she not?
Oh, yes, sir. A hard-working or better woman never lived.
Oh, poor young widow struggling to maintain her family is a delicious picture of human goodness, don't you think? Put your hat down, Kit.
Thank you, sir, but I have to get going.
No. Put it down. Stay a while.
Brass grabs his cap and, placing something inside it, he flips it over.
What's to prevent us giving this good young woman, your mother, a nice wage in return for a little, like, dusting and washing? What do you say to that? See any objection?
How can I see any objection to such a kind offer, sir?
Very well, then. It's done. We'll say no more.
Sammy?
Yes, sister?
Come here and help me.
Of course. Will you excuse me, Kit?
Kit turns to Swiveller.
He seems a generous, honest man.
Does he?
Swiveller looks doubtful and goes back to his writing. Sally and her brother come back in, hauling a box between them. Kit picks up his cap from the desk.
Well, sir, if that's all, I'll best be off.
Yes, you run along, honest young fellow, and tell your mother all we discussed.
Kit puts on his cap and leaves. Brass glances at Sally nervously and checks his pockets.
Dear me.
What have you lost, Sammy?
A £5 note.
He searches through the documents on his desk. Swiveller goes back to his work.
What? It's gone.
£5?
Well, never mind. What's £5? The boy's honest, you know. Very honest.
Yes. It's far too mean to suspect him.
The Brass siblings turn to Swiveller, who, sensing their gaze, turns towards them. After glancing at them both, he has a moment of realization, and open-mouthed, he rushes to place his fountain pen back in its pot and races after Kit. Brass breathes a sigh of relief. Kit rounds the corner on a bustling street. A storm lantern's flame flickers in the evening darkness.
Come back here!
Swiveller waves him over. Kit turns to run, but comes face to face with Quilp grinning madly. The two men lead Kit back to the Brosses. Outside St. Saviour's Orphanage, the handsome cab pulls up. Its owner climbs down and lifts out Nell, who lies limp and unconscious in his arms.
Blankets! Get some blankets!
In Bross's office, Brass roughly searches Kit. He forces the boy to kneel before him. Sally watches with a raised eyebrow.
Nothing here. All is perfectly satisfactory.
Told you so. I wish you'd believe me.
The boy is innocent, Mr. Quilp. My examination proves it.
Very well. He may go.
But first...
Sally blocks the door.
Is what?
The hat, Mr. Swiveller, if you please.
Kit willingly hands Swiveller his cap.
Inside the lining.
The lining?
The lining.
Swiveller turns the hat round in his hands. Brass raises his chin as he watches the scene play out. Swiveller reaches into the lining and pulls out a folded note.
I knew it. Like his master, the boy's a liar and a thief.
I never did it. Please, you've got to believe me.
Oh, miserable miscreant. Is this the boy who is going to benefit from my benevolence?
Please. Sir, honest, sir, I never stole nothing.
Constable, if you please.
Swiveller shoves his hat at Kit and hands Sally the note on his way out. She clutches it to her chest. The constable leads Kit out.
I never wronged anyone of a farthing, sir, honest.
I only wish I could doubt the evidence of my senses, but the dispositions are unimpeachable.
Moral funeral.
Help us as hand, Kit, I promise. I'm afraid you won't be able to help each other now, sir. Oh, what a disappointment for your mother. And this kind gentleman who has trusted you so much, such treachery. I can hardly believe it myself. You little monkey.
Kit clutches at the steel bars with his cuffed hands as the police wagon pulls away. Quilp turns to the lodger with mock disappointment. The lodger watches the boy be carried off. From an upstairs window, Swiveller watches them. Swiveller raises a glass sitting opposite the maid.
Cheery be, Mr. Swiveller.
They drink, and the maid examines the cards in her hand.
What did mistress call you?
A little devil.
Really? Well, to make this evening seem all the more real and pleasant, I think I shall call you the Marchioness.
I say yes.
for how I should like that so very much. It makes everything between us so properly dignified, doesn't it?
It does.
He looks around.
Locked up down here.
Almost always. At least you would. If I didn't own her ladyship's spare key.
How very ingenious of you, Marchioness.
She smiles, but her head drops with embarrassment and glances down at her cards. She places them face up on the table.
Marchioness, it occurs to me that you must be in the constant habit of airing your eye at keyholes to know all you know.
Oh, yes, sir. I hear things through chinks and keyholes that will make your hair curl. Still, I never thought I'm capable of such an evil deed. That poor boy.
He leans forward. The constable drags Kit through a prison's corridor.
Congratulations, you false witness. You perjurer. You suborners of evidence.
He's the richest of humours, don't you think, Sally? Most amazing vein of comicality.
Very droll, brother.
Well, I'm pleased you think so.
The fact is, sir, any allusion to these little conspiracies of ours?
What conspiracies are you talking about, Mr. Brass?
Exactly, sir. Caution. Caution.
Don't talk to me of your conspirings. Do I know anything about you and your sister's lies? I haven't conspired with anybody.
Quite right, sir. I shouldn't have mentioned it. All is forgotten.
Good.
Quilp raises his glass and drinks. A candle casts a warm glow from Nell's bedside. Hearing the door, she slowly wakes and sits up in her bed. Outside the orphanage, the ground is covered in snow. Nell's grandfather wanders out through the main metal gate. Nell, in her white nightdress, watches him from the window. Still in her nightdress, she follows him through the blowing snow. Her hair hangs in a plait over one shoulder. She rushes out the gate and down the street after her grandfather. He ducks beneath the snow-covered branches in a wooded area. A light dusting of snow covers the shoulders of his black coat. She ducks through the trees in the semi-darkness after him. She pushes tree branches out of her path as she trudges through the snow. From behind a tree, she spies her grandfather playing cards in a makeshift shelter. Her grandfather lifts Nell's mother's locket from his pocket, dangling it before his opponent. Snow coming down around her, Nell turns and runs through the trees. Her grandfather stands and takes a few steps after her.
Forgive me. Oh, forgive me.
She's tired herself out, sir. No, Reverend. She's tired of life. I've broken her heart. With my false promises.
The Reverend grabs his shoulders.
Repent, sir. For good. Before it's too late.
Nell's grandfather hangs his head. In Brass's office.
Your serving girl is our witness. She saw and overheard everything.
The girl's a liar.
Still, brother, keep your reserve.
I congratulate you, ma'am. You have the honor of being sister to one of the greatest rogues that ever lived.
If I may venture to say, miss, you are in every respect quite worthy of him.
How dare you suggest I had any kind of dealings
with you both is, I believe, a third party. A villain by the name of...
Quilp.
Hold your tongue, workhouse.
Quilp is the prime devil of this whole affair, isn't he?
Be careful, sir. What you say is slander.
Yeah. Ah, very true, brother. A scullery maid's word against two honourable members of the legal profession. Who would believe her?
The maid grabs a book.
He writes everything down, sir.
Hush your mouth!
He keeps a list of all the evil doings he's done. I've seen it all. Through my keyhole.
Here is your evidence, sir. Every word written down for all the world to see. The man's a rogue.
Oh, Sally.
You're straight. Mr. Quilp distinctly told you to write nothing down.
To cover his own tracks, why should I listen to him?
Oh, Sammy.
There's enough evidence here to lock you both away for life.
Oh, sister, let us confess. Let us make it easier upon us.
What are you doing?
Sally, these gentlemen are offering us some kind of pardon. If we help them, are you not?
Hardly that, sir. But I suppose your good faith might be acknowledged when considering your crimes.
Do you hear that, sister? Very well, then. My answer to all these crimes and more is...
Quilp.
No.
With tight lips, Brass nods his head.
Yes, sister, yes! My answer to all these crimes is Quilp. He who despises me with an icy heart. Quilp, who gives us both the cold shoulder and laughs with disdain at these very matters concerning Kit Nubbles, as if he had nothing to do with it, whereas in fact, he was the first to propose it.
Brother, you've said too much. We are ruined. You've ruined us both.
And in ruining ourselves, Sally, we have ruined him. Mr. Daniel Quilp hangs.
An angry mob led by the police carry burning torches through the dark, snowy streets. Mrs. Quilp, in a cloak, runs along the snow-covered dockside.
Daniel! Tell your wise woman off. I'll come out and scratch you.
You must leave here at once. They're coming for you. They know the truth.
Are you babbling about, woman?
The angry mob approach, leaving tracks in the snow.
Sister, they've broken your confidence. The neighbourhood is angry, Daniel. They want revenge.
Brass. Oh, Brass. If only I had you here. If only we were face to face in this room again, how well contented one of us would be.
The angry mob bang their fists on Quilp's door.
Let me help you.
I don't want you to help me.
Why do you hate life so much, Daniel? You think money is everything?
Out of my way.
He shoves Mrs. Quilp to the ground. Quilp sneaks down the icy steps of the dockside, carrying a canvas sack in one arm. He heads down towards the frozen water below, as snow flurries around him. He glances over his shoulder before continuing down the stairs. He cautiously places one foot on the ice. From beneath the white sheet of ice, his feet form a black silhouette as he steps out onto the frozen water.
Daniel! Daniel, please!
He runs along the ice, holding onto the dock ropes for support. Betsy stands on the dockside. Quilp tosses his sack into a small rowboat as the ice strains beneath him.
There is love in you somewhere, I know there is!
He unties the boat.
I didn't marry you out of love.
Quilp crashes through the ice and plunges into the murky green water below. His coat floats in the water. From above, his wife sees his panicked face as he bangs on the clear surface.
Daniel?
Mrs. Quilp kneels on the dockside, searching for her husband. Quilp bangs on the underside of the ice as jewels and money fall from his pockets. Coins drift down through the water. Mrs. Quilp weeps on the dockside. A string of pearls slowly drifts downwards as 5-pound notes float to the surface, just beneath the sheet of ice. mob arrive.
Come. It's over.
Come on, Willa.
Two men lift Mrs. Quilp to her feet and guide her away. Daniel Quilp's pale face stares up at the gathered crowd from the underside of the ice. The constable unlocks Kit's cell door, where Kit sits slumped against the wall. He lifts his head and gazes up at the Brosses' lodger. Kit's mother hangs laundry in the light of morning.
Kit!
She embraces her son, lifting him into the air. Her face crumples with emotion. The lodger steps out of the alley. She looks at the bashful man.
Can I ever thank you, sir?
I'm letting your son make one last journey with me, Mum. It's time to see my daughter.
Nell is feverish. Her grandfather sits at her bedside, clutching her hand. Nell writhes in pain. Her hair clings to her forehead.
The child is very weak.
The Reverend leads Kit and Nell's father. They enter the orphanage.
I pray we're not too late.
Nell lies still in her candlelit room. Her grandfather watches her.
Dear Master.
What is this? Kit? Am I dreaming?
It's no dream, Master. What you see is... it's real.
My God. It can't be.
This is me, Father. Your son.
A spirit?
No spirit, Master. See, it's your own.
My own flesh and blood.
I'm sorry for deserting you, Father. Forgive me, sir. Forgive
me. Hush, hush. Say no more. You have returned now, and that is all we ever wanted. Oh, this should be a joyous time. Not a dream.
They go to Nell. Nell's father approaches her bed apprehensively.
Today will break me forever.
Nell lies with her eyes closed and her hands folded across her abdomen.
Yes, Nell. Come to see you, Miss. Look, someone else is here.
Slowly, Nell turns her head towards her father.
This is your father, child.
Father.
Nell's father kneels at her bedside and looks at her lovingly.
If you'll let me be here.
Nell attempts to sit up.
Don't try and sit up, Nell. You must rest.
He gently caresses her forehead as Nell struggles to keep her eyes open.
See you, Father. I'm glad you've come home.
So much, huh?
See what I have caused.
Nell's grandfather leans in closer to her.
Please.
I will never leave you.
I'm sorry, child. I'd have done anything for you if I could.
I know.
I love you.
I love you.
You live forever in my heart.
Nell closes her eyes and her head slumps to one side. Her grandfather's eyes fill with tears. Her father stares at her sadly, and her grandfather weeps.
She's now peaceful. She's released. Her soul is set free.
Her grandfather nods and wipes his nose. He takes the locket from his pocket and places it in her pale hand. He curls her fingers around it and places her small fist over her heart. The Reverend enters a graveyard filled with trees in blossom. Young girls frolic past the gray-colored gravestones beneath the falling pink petals. Clutching his Bible, he crosses to a plain square gravestone. He kneels before the small grassy grave where purple and white flowers blossom.
It is hard to take to heart the lesson that such a death brings.
The Reverend gently touches the flowers. Kit carries the birdcage down a street.
Forever in those that love them. And plays their part through them in all their redeeming actions of this world.
People toss flower petals at Swiveller and the Marchioness as they step out of a church beaming. She wears a wedding dress and has a wreath in her hair. In the curiosity shop, Nell's father and grandfather play chess.
Like a story that is now told.
Kit hangs the birdcage in the shop window, a small brown bird hopping inside. Pedestrians pass by the old curiosity shop.